I run the family business.
I run the family.
Florida politics is my playground.
I walked away from it all in favor of the politics of the playground.
Neither of us suffers from a lack of opinions.
This is
He Said,
She Said. Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of He Said, She Said. This is part two of our three-part series featuring interviews we recorded at the Florida Democrats' annual statewide convention and gala.
I love this idea of getting a lot of good interviews from people from a big event. I think people are, they're actually jazzed up for things rather than, all right, we're just calling you on a Monday morning. They may be busy. They may have things to do, but the people that we're talking to, as everybody keeps kind of like hovering around, they want to talk to us. Like, they want to pitch their stories.
Well, let's be honest. The real reason why it's more fun is everybody has a cocktail when we're recording these.
Yes. It's often at night and
lips are looser.
Right.
And it's a fun atmosphere.
I actually like, you know, like I've been messing around trying to learn the technical, but I like the background. Like you hear a little bit of the bartending behind us, or you'll have some people. It is amazing to me. People will see us with microphones talking to people, which there's only one reason to do that.
That would not have happened.
And they come in, they put their stuff on us.
I was amazed at the women coming out of the Women's Democratic Caucus meeting who just came and piled all their stuff. And then there's the one guy who set his stuff down on the table and picked up his phone and made a phone call.
Right. And
he's looking at us. And I looked at him and said, we're recording a podcast here.
I mean, it's on us, I guess. Like, we should have, like, some sort of on-air sign blinking.
There's an on-air sign right here.
But what else would we be doing with our two talking into the microphones?
And guests and tables and chairs at our table. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't get that at all.
One of the many things that made me bang my head against the wall that weekend.
I don't know. Like, you're not coming down to the convention or for the debates in Miami, but I don't know what the big event.
Who all is allowed to speak at those debates? Like, how many people are they going to have on stage? Are they going to have all 24 Yahoos? Have they all gotten enough small dollar donors to be allowed on stage?
Well, right now, I think they're at 16 or 17. I think.
Right. So what the hell are you going to do with 16 or 17
you're gonna
people?
You're going to do two debates by random selection.
No,
not even an undercard. As we're talking right now,
That is bullshit. Because if Kamala Harris ends up in one and Joe Biden ends up in the other, I'm not getting the matchup I want in a debate. Listen, I want them debating side by side.
Well, I mean, but you can't have 17, 18 people
right.
on
they
the stage.
They need to have an undercard. This random drawing thing the Democrats are going to do here so no one's feelings get hurt is a mistake.
I kind of agree with AOC right now. She took a shot at John Delaney, who we talked about, saying, because he came out against Medicare for All and against socialism. And she said, you know, instead of expanding the field, it's time to start narrowing the field. And some of these folks that are polling at, you know, 0.2% and they haven't gotten anywhere should consider dropping out. I don't think you can do that. I don't think, you know, because as we talk about it in one of the interviews, Bill Clinton was not even on the radar against George Bush when he won in 92. At this point, and
there
that's
weren't
like,
24 people running for the Democratic nomination either.
I get it.
Are going to be denied the debate that we really need to see.
Well, I think the second debate, it starts to shrink down. So I think that I don't remember the specifics, but they up the polling threshold. They up the donor threshold. I think that'll help. I think it's funny, as we're sitting here taping this, they announced that they're going to have five hosts or five moderators for these two debates.
Why?
So there's
so you
just,
need more people talking and
so
messing up
many
the airwaves.
People
again,
in Miami,
they're
which is
trying
be crazy.
To make everyone happy. Right. You cannot appease everybody. It's time to get down to the real work of winning an election.
Okay, but all right. So there's like Mayor Pete, I think, in the latest like New Hampshire or Iowa poll is at like 14% or something like that. Like, Kristen Gillibrand is at like 1%. Are you going to tell a United States senator that she's not allowed on the stage?
She can be in the undercard debate until she can get traction.
I think you get traction by making your name
but
at a debate.
But how are you going to make your name at a debate with so many people mucking up the stage?
It is a double-edged sword. I think you have to do what they did in Iowa over the weekend.
And here's
which
the thing,
is everybody
I don't have
gets 5 minutes and they get to make their elevator pitch.
Right, you know, and they can kill it like Kamala Harris did.
I think that's what people are forgetting. Like, I don't know these people and I follow this stuff. I don't know the biographies on, you know, if you told me Kamala Harris, I know prosecutor, et cetera, but I can't go beyond much more than that. I don't know the biography on Gillibrand. I don't know the biography on Mayor Pete. I don't know the biography on Tim Ryan. And
I can't remember half of their names.
Well, I don't
there's
think
just,
you're supposed to,
there's
though,
just too
yet.
Many it's, of them.
Well, anyways, so that...
Don't you think there are other seats some of these people could be running for that could also be advancing the causes of the Democratic Party?
Well,
that
I
would
mean,
be more beneficial to the party than them wasting the airwave.
Well, tell that to Beto, who should be running for Senate in Texas.
Listen, I know it's ridiculous. Beto should be running for Senate and Senate for Texas again.
It was kind of remarkable how not just how many candidates didn't come to this week's convention, but I really didn't see a lot of presence from a lot of the candidates.
I saw no campaign materials except for John Delaney's
right.
campaign.
I guess
that was the only campaign that had an actual presence. Well, and Bernie did. There
yeah,
was
I was going to say they
very
all tweeted
annoying
it.
Bernie press conference with
the
people
Bernie
chanting
Bros were there.
While
they were in their shorts.
While we were trying to podcast.
I thought they were just tourists.
They kept trying to get me to
Bernie
put on
shirts.
Stickers.
Yeah.
And they kept trying to get me to sign something.
I will vote for Trump if Bernie is anywhere close to the nomination.
I absolutely will, too.
I will.
Bernie Sanders has no business being president of the United States of America.
No, not at all. All right, so we've got that. But I got to tell you, I know that we're doing a lot, and we got a lot of politics. Can I jump in really with a couple of quick hits on some pop culture that's been going on because...
Well, you need to get it off your chest. I think you're more disappointed in what's been going on with some of your pop culture choices than you are in the Democratic field for president.
That's true. If it wasn't Father's Day week, I would be more morose right now because... So last Wednesday was the beginning of Stream Apocalypse with Black Mirror and Handmaid's Tale, and then Dark Phoenix was starting on Thursday night. There's a lot of shows that are coming out right now because they counter-program to the network shows. I can't tell you how bad and disappointing Black Mirror was. The episode with Miley Cyrus may be a series-killing episode. It is that bad. It is some tale of a pop star becoming a doll to escape the burdens of celebrity. And it's just atrocious. It is very hard to watch. It's not entertaining. It's not Black Mirror caliber. And, you know, when you're only doing a season with three episodes, which I don't get that anyway.
I mean, that's not a season.
That's not a season. It's just like I can't word of mouth Black Mirror to anybody right now. And I did early on.
And normally I would jump in here and I would defend a Miley Cyrus type, but I can't even defend this. The casting makes no sense. Her acting is not that good. It doesn't fit. It's a total misfire. It's clearly just a stunt, and they didn't need to pull a stunt.
Likewise.
It is definitely a jump the shark moment for the show.
Dark Phoenix, the latest in the X-Men series. This is the last one that Sony has before it now the rights revert to Marvel. And I'm like, thank God. I've really liked the series. It's played under the radar for years. Even though it gets big, it makes big money, but it's not at the same level as Batman or Spider-Man or the Avengers. But they've always been intelligent. The Dark Phoenix narrative about Jean Grey getting superpowers beyond what she already had is a familiar one inside the X-Men universe. This was rather boring. I guess maybe we've seen it done already. Jessica Chastain, I think we are finding this again and again. We are running out of villains. A bland Jessica Chastain was disappointing. And so it's just like I hit Black Mirror and then Dark Phoenix, and I haven't even hit Handmaid's Tale, but I read the reviews about where they're just like, it's so sloggy. And I'm in just a bad mood pop culture wise.
Yeah, I'm not jumping into Handmaid's Tale. You tried to get me to, and I just couldn't actually bring myself to do it. I really wanted to be able to bring myself to do it. But like you, I read the reviews, and it's just not worth letting that into my headspace, which is a shame because such a critical darling.
Well, what's the one show, the one documentary that we watched, and it did get into our headspace?
Oh, my gosh. And we had to take a break after the first.
That was definitely not a binge worth.
When They See Us, the story of the Central Park Five, it's a five-part mini-series.
Right.
And we watched the first episode, and I just wanted to curl up in a ball and cry.
Right. It's about the railroading of the five suspects. I'm using that term loosely.
They were cleared.
They were suspects at the time, and they basically get railroaded. And it's and you know, looming over this story is Donald Trump inflaming this whole story. And so it's very relevant right now.
Yeah, let's not forget Donald Trump took out a full page ad calling for their conviction.
Right. The death penalty.
The death penalty for these five boys. And the first episode, it was just so heartbreaking because you saw each moment where each boy decided to go to Central Park.
Yes.
And they all could have each made one different choice. One of the boys, in fact, wasn't even getting picked up by the police, but he always looked out for his friend who was younger than him. But you could tell that this was the younger kid was the smart one who was supposed to get out.
Right.
So mama was really making sure that he always stayed out of trouble, and this friend had been tasked with it. So he went to the police station with him to try to protect him, and he ends up being convicted of this where he wasn't even a suspect.
And what happened to the prosecutor on that case is a novelist.
Oh, this is my favorite part of this.
There's some justice here.
My friend Erin works in publishing promotion somehow. So she's very dialed in, particularly into the crime thriller genre of authors. And the prosecutor from that case is a very successful legal thriller books writer. That's not shocking to hear. Well, just to be very clear, this woman doesn't think she's done anything wrong. She has said, even in the face of DNA evidence exonerating and a full confession of someone who was already convicted and serving a death penalty sentence or a life sentence, and DNA evidence to confirm this man's confession, this prosecutor still says that she does not regret what she did, and they were definitely guilty of something, so it was okay. Well, this woman got nominated for a Lifetime Achievement Award in the publishing industry. That's pretty respectable. Stephen King is one of the honorees, and because of the backlash due to this miniseries, they have stripped her from it. Her book publishers have dropped her from her deals, but the one thing is, they're continuing to sell her books. And I think that her agent dropped her as well. And this all has happened within the last week or so. So she's getting some sort of justice. The one last step is everybody says they just need to go ahead and pull all of her books off shelves. A lot of the people in publishing think that the publishing houses, the books have already printed. They're just going to let them slowly go out of print. They're not printing anymore, but they're not going to just burn the books.
Well, that's the story of a very bad prosecutor. Our first interview is with one of the best state attorneys in Florida, somebody that's been in the headlines himself for some of the big name cases that he's handled in celebrity rich Palm Beach, which you were excited to talk about with him. Although he had some big news that he wanted to share with us about an issue that he has doggedly pursued. Dave Ehrenberg, a longtime friend of both of ours, here at the convention.
And just one of the best guys in the process.
Somebody if you said he was running for governor in 2022 or whatever the next time is, I would be so excited.
What was the last statewide office he ran for?
He ran for attorney general in 2010.
We wrote him a big check for it back when.
Again,
was painful for us. Back when a $1,000 campaign contribution was painful, we wrote him one.
It was Ehrenberg and Gelber, two great men running for it. It was like, whichever one, and then Pam Bondi coming out of the third, you know, the Republican on that side. You know, we're big fans of Pam, who got to be.
I'm sure we donated on that side too. We were talking primary.
Pam
and we donated.
Stopped by the White House, by the way, this week, looking beautiful and stunning as always.
Your obsession with Pam Bondi knows no bounds.
All right, but let's talk to our first interview in this podcast is with Dave Ehrenberg, who's got some very interesting news to share with us about real life crime and pop culture. We are now live with Dave Ehrenberg in Orlando at the 2019 Florida Democratic Gala. He's one of our best friends. He has been for over a decade, so we were excited to have him on.
In proof that social media works, Dave posted that he was here at the convention, and I said, Peter, ask him to come on the podcast, and here we are. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm hoping someone will take a picture of us here talking so I can post it on Twitter and advertise this podcast.
We need to, if we tweeted that out right now, I mean, I see Kevin Kate in the background. You know, he does take incredible soft focus photos. I mean, it'll take out all of our blemishes.
I need a major filter.
Yeah.
I'm getting old fast.
And I need the slimming and the Facetune. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. I love the job. And, you know, I love being around these people here because, you know, they are passionate, opinionated. I love it.
You've been talked about so long for higher office because I do that talking.
Thank you.
And I always think of you whenever there is an open position, but you just seem content in this great state attorney's job, because it is one of the great jobs in Florida politics, being a sheriff, being a state attorney of a large county law enforcement department, or being state of attorney in a county like Palm Beach, where you're always getting interesting cases. You've got a pretty big empire to get a hold of. What does your day look like running that big of a department?
Every day is different. It's a totally different job than being a state senator. When you're in the state Senate, you got that great title of senator, but in reality, you are just 1/40th of 1/3 of, you're 1/40th of 1/2 of one of three branches of government. So that's the way to keep you humble. When you're a state attorney, you're one of one. There are 20 of us throughout the state, but the governor is not our boss. The attorney general is not our boss. The people are our bosses. And as long as you are reflecting the will of the people, you're going to be able to stay there. And, you know, it keeps you humble because the power that you have is really huge in that it is the ultimate power of government to deprive someone of their freedom. Not many jobs can do that in government. So you got to get it right every time. You got to treat your power with humility. And I love the job. And I think we've been able to make a difference, especially when it comes to the opioid crisis and other issues. You know, when I was a state senator, I was there for 8 years and I loved it. But you, as a member of the minority party, you had to ask permission just about for anything, get bills passed, to be committee chairs. When you're a state attorney, the buck stops here.
What about the job was most surprising to you?
You know, there are a few things. First, the lack of funding from the legislature for years has created a problem when it comes to public safety, in that you lose your 3 to 5 year attorneys. And I know public defenders have the same problem and other agencies. But when you start as an assistant state attorney at $40,000 a year with six figures of loans, you are then tempted 3 years later, when you have 50 to 100 trials under your belt, to go to a private law firm offering you $100,000 a year or more. And so that's why it was a big deal when the legislature this year finally increased the starting salaries of our state attorneys to assistant state attorneys to $50,000.
That was a big win for the judicial system.
It was.
Yeah.
And I think it'll help public safety, and it'll save money in the long run, because when you reduce turnover, it saves money.
There seems to be, in like Palm Beach and kind of Tampa Bay, we are like ground zero for Florida man cases. You know, there was a great argument this week by somebody for Columbia Journalism Review saying, listen, those are not cases to be made fun of. That most of those times, those domestic situations, there's obviously a tragedy in there. There's also a lot of people kind of in the mental health area. Like somebody that's doing these things, if we had got them the resources they need, they would not have become Florida man. So I say that all as my qualifier to say, what has been one of the more interesting cases that you've had to deal with since being a state attorney?
Well, you know, as for Florida man, you're right. If we could really do something about mental illness, you would have fewer of these crazy cases. But there are still some cases that you just shake your head, and it's just truly embarrassing for our state. You know, I was thinking about the guy throwing the live alligator to the fast food drive-thru window. You know, that's, of course, only in Florida.
That was in your jurisdiction?
I don't know. I think that was in Broward. But as far as crazy cases, I mean, we have high-profile celebrity cases way too often. There's the Countess from The Real Housewives of New York.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me. I'm going to kill you. I will kill you. For what? For what did I do? I did nothing wrong.
I'm so thrilled that that's in your jurisdiction.
That's Palm Beach County. And she just came back for a probation violation hearing where she was briefly put in handcuffs by the judge because she was not showing sufficient remorse.
She has no remorse. I think that the judge should have probably put her in jail because if you watch the show, all she does is run around and act like she's better than everybody. And like, lady, you have been thrown into the back of a cop car. You've threatened to kill a police officer. You've been in front of a judge more times than I have in my life. You should have a little bit of remorse and maybe take your sobriety a little bit seriously.
Yeah, I'm amazed how many people know who this person is. In fact, I get asked about her and her it's just a long, she goes by the Countess, but it's like the, what's her pronunciation of
Luann
her name?
De Lesseps.
De Lesseps, yes.
Which is her name from her husband before her immediate ex-husband.
Right. Well, you know, we try to, well, we do equal justice in Palm Beach County. We try not to let celebrity status have any influence over anything. But the one thing it does do is that does create a higher profile case. And it sometimes makes you call a press conference to deal with it because there's such immense media interest. It seems that every high profile case emanates in Palm Beach County.
Well, that, I was just going to say, if you've listened to some He Said, She Said episodes, anytime we can intersect politics and a Bravo TV show, that for us is ratings gold. Last week we had Southern Charm with our mutual friend Joe Abruzzo.
Was Joe on the air?
No, he wasn't on the air, but we were talking about...
Joe made the mistake of dating a cast member of a reality show with a bad dating history.
As a good friend of Joe's, I remember when he went through
Catherine
it.
You know about Catherine Dennis.
Yeah. Well, again, another one of those things where he tells me he's dating this celebrity reality show person from Bravo. And of course, I had no idea. Unless they're on WWE, I probably don't know who that person is.
Did anyone ever tell you that the father of her children was the disgraced former state treasurer from South Carolina who ran as an independent against Senator Lindsey Graham?
Well, I know. I didn't know that last part.
Oh, yeah.
But generally,
that was season 5 or 4 of Southern Charm.
Yeah, well, I found out about her dating history based on the last episode, which I watched for the first time because Joe was involved in it. And in watching the show, I texted Joe. I said, Joe, this is unwatchable. I don't find this show very interesting at all. I'm sorry if other people like it, but I didn't find it very interesting, no?
It's, all of them are slice of life. You have to kind of get into the characters. But then again, like, especially with the person he was dating, and you watch her downfall and now resurrection. A couple seasons ago, we were saying to each other, hey, there are kids on the other side of this, that this domestic situation is happening to, you know, he's had children with this person. Gary Finout looming over us. It's a podcast. It's not like live air. Is the toughest job in your department the public information officer?
Yeah, Mike Edmondson, who's been with the office for a long, long time. He's old school. He doesn't do social media.
No, he doesn't do social media. I've had to call a couple of times down to your department, and it's... Yeah, they're immune. They don't care if I, like, tweet at them.
Yeah, and so when you see a tweet by me, it really is from me. It's not like he has my Twitter account. And so I can't pawn it off on him. Or if I make some stupid comment online, I can't pretend that it's, oh, that's a staff error. No, I make my own social media comments. But Mike does a good job. He is, though, a very... careful about not overstepping our bounds, because when I was a state senator, you could say anything about anything. When you're a state attorney, you got to be really judicious about your comments because you could jeopardize pending cases. So I want to be more out into the media where I have full disclosure about all these topics and issues. But Mike is smart about limiting what we say about pending cases because that could jeopardize those trials.
Well, we know you've got to get to a reception and a couple of other things, but you wanted to share something you and I have both, we've talked about a lot. I've written about it. It's something I guess we're simpatico on one of the loopholes in Florida election law, the write-in loophole, which is a scourge, basically, of the democracy in Florida. We tried to close it, and we couldn't. And so where are you at now with all of that?
It's hard to ask politicians who benefit from the system to change the system. And when it comes to the write-in loophole, it's a scam. What happens is you have two candidates in a race who come from the same political party, and under the Constitution, everyone is allowed to vote in that race, except under a loophole in the law created by Catherine Harris when she was Secretary of State, that if you find a write-in candidate who pays no fee, gets no signatures, just puts his or her name on the ballot, then that closes the primary and disenfranchises thousands of voters who otherwise would be allowed to vote. Both parties do it, and that's why sometimes in pushing to close that loophole, it makes me unpopular in some Democratic circles because there are some Democratic candidates who do that. And so in the last election, I joined with Sherry Plymel, a Republican, right from the Treasure Coast, and she and I went after 8 write-in candidates.
And you tried to, if I can interject, you tried to work it through the CRC, the Constitutional Revision Commission, beforehand, which she was a part of, appointed by Senator Negron.
Correct. She sponsored a measure that I helped draft, which would have closed the write-in loophole, and it came very close to passing. But certain individuals had a vested interest in keeping it as is because it benefits their own narrow political interests. And a shame on them and a shame on all those who continue to defraud the public through this loophole. And I'm glad that you speak out about it. But what we did was we decided to, for the first time, to actually go after these write-in loopholes through the write-in candidates through the Ethics Commission. We couldn't go after them just for being write-in candidates, even though we knew they were shams. So I looked at all their financial disclosure forms. We found those with obvious mistakes, obvious omissions. We filed ethics complaints against them. Because what happens when these sham write-in candidates are recruited by candidates on both sides of the aisle, they're told, hey, just fill out this form. No one's going to bother you about it. You can ride off in the sunset with anonymity, with no pain, no penalty, and you'll be doing me a favor. And they do that. Well, no longer. Now, they know they're on notice that if you run as a phony, a sham write-in candidate, not legitimate write-in candidate, a sham one, which is defined as a candidate solely to disenfranchise voters, solely to close out the primary, then you're going to be scrutinized and you may ultimately be fined, have to hire lawyers and defend yourself in front of the Ethics Commission because we're going to be watching you.
We need to get that story out so people beyond Palm Beach, beyond your social media platform know so that people, when they get into the House race for House District 1, where it's 2 Republicans, and they may not be paying attention down to Palm Beach or South Florida or Tampa Bay, that everybody knows. That the 20-year-old college student that Googles that, a writing candidate, when they're getting recruited and bamboozled into doing that, because it is kind of the sham. It is, listen, it's already easy enough to win re-election in this state. Let's not make it a slam dunk.
Yeah, for example, in Lee County, Collier County, Hendry and Glades County, they have a state attorney that's elected by all the people. And there are 2 Republicans running. At the last minute, a phony candidate, a write-in candidate, signed up who disenfranchised every Democrat and every NPA. And so a majority of the voters cannot vote for their state attorney. So that was one of the candidates I filed an ethics complaint against for filing a bad financial disclosure form. I can't get at them for being a write-in candidate because there's a loophole in the law, but I can get at them for screwing up their forms. And so that's what this is all about.
Well, our listeners can probably hear in the background the reception starting to pick up some speed. So I know that we need to let you go and get to meeting with other folks while you're here at the convention. We want to thank you so much for taking time with us. I want to thank you for being such a great state attorney, because I got to tell you, I don't know a lot of state attorneys who would have prosecuted the countess for her drunken tumble. And so you definitely don't give celebrities special treatment. And for that, I salute you, sir.
Well, thank you, Michelle. You know, we also had the case of Tiger Woods when he had his DUI. And we treat him like everyone else. He was able to go through a first-time DUI offender program where he took responsibility for his actions. And then what happens after he got through the program? He won the Masters. Coincidence?
No, absolutely not. I'm going to give you full credit. I say Dave Ehrenberg is responsible for Tiger Woods' comeback. and his Medal of Freedom that the president gave him. And I'd also like to thank you for throwing in another celebrity's name that we can tag in our social media posts about this episode to spread the reach of our podcast.
Hey, thank you, Michelle. Thank you, St. Peter. You guys are awesome.
Wait, you're the best. Thank you, sir. If Dave Ehrenberg wasn't already one of my very favorite people, dating back to when he sent Ella Joyce the adorable bib that says, "I get it from my mama," he is definitely my favorite now for managing to tie the Real Housewives of New York City into a podcast about politics. It's like he was speaking my language. And let's not forget, he pulled in Southern Charm for me, too.
I wonder why, like, when people are listening to on the Apple iTunes page, why it says, if you like this podcast, you'll like other ones. And there's the political ones. And then there are the other ones from Bravo shows. And it is because of we just keep coming back to the Bravo intersection. It's amazing.
And poor Joe Abruzzo. I mean, he has to be brought up again about dating a reality star.
Abruzzo.
Now, we're being really nice about it. I mean, his friend was just on defending him.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot that they were... Can you imagine Dave and Joe just kind of running around Palm Beach? I mean, those two guys.
Listen,
I mean,
I can just imagine Dave being like, "Hey, Joe, this is a really bad idea. I prosecute reality stars. Maybe you should think twice."
You know, like that position, I as we were talking to Dave, I was like, he is the state attorney of Palm Beach. And you think about all of the wealth in Palm Beach that comes down for the winter and how many times, and I know he would never, it doesn't even rise to him, but it's like how many parties are there that get broken up and people get no charged, or I don't know, some people that maybe could have gotten arrested for a DUI. And
they prosecuted a reality television star for being so hammered on Christmas Eve that she accidentally went into the wrong hotel room to have relations with her male companion for the evening. And when the maid walked in and told them to get out, that wasn't their room, being the entitled countess that she is, she was not kind to the maid, who then called security, who then called police. If they were people inclined to let celebrities off for the sake of celebrity, they didn't do it this time.
All right, I guess it's not the celebrity folks. It's also the big, huge money folks and they don't even get into trouble. They walk in between raindrops. It's got to be interesting. Just like it's, you know, interesting to be like the state attorney for the Eastern District of New York. The people that you are going after are Bobby Axelrod. And it's like
Donald Trump.
Right. You're going after Bobby Axelrod and Donald Trump, except they're in Florida. So I don't know. That's an interesting job. I really want.
So except they're on yachts instead of helicopters.
Do you think Dave, does he run for statewide office again, or is this just too good
of a job? I would love for him to run for statewide office again, but I really think it's just too good of a job.
Yeah.
He really seems to enjoy it, and I really found it interesting when he said that, you know, he doesn't have a boss that he reports to aside from the people who elect him.
The people.
The people, I mean, as our good friend Charlie says.
He is definitely from the People's Caucus.
Definitely from the People's Caucus.
Charlie, remember when he traveled up here to co-host
Ehrenberg, a fundraiser? Oh, no, that was the other way around. We had Charlie co-host a fundraiser for Dave.
If Charlie picks Ehrenberg in 2010, or 2014, and Ehrenberg agrees to run as LG instead of Annette Tadeo, is that enough pop out of the LG spot to get Charlie across a very narrow chasm versus Rick Scott?
Man, that's a really tough question, because that's clearly who I wanted him to pick.
Right.
And we wanted him to pick Gelber also.
Gelber or Ehrenberg, I think.
I think they could have really delivered. You know, they made the pick of a woman to try to cater, and no offense to Annette Tadeo, it didn't work.
It didn't add anything.
It did not add anything.
And I know
if you pick the right LG who has their own network to excite and help turn out the vote, you might have won differently. Annette Tadeo just does not have the network that Dave Ehrenberg had. Now, I would argue that Dan Gelber's network was already engaged firmly.
Sure.
And was already turned out and helping the Chris campaign just by virtue of his involvement in it. But
I think
I don't really like to think about what might have been that way, because it's just a slippery slope to go down. You know, if only he'd run for reelect as governor.
Oh, don't even get that should be an entire, we should do a podcast called Butterfly Effect and what that would have done, not just to Florida politics, but to national politics.
Yeah.
Because I think it really does change the math on some of the national races. And does that keep things like Donald Trump from happening? It's this very scary butterfly effect. Okay, so Ehrenberg was great. You know, this is, well, I'm sitting here wearing this, you know, my Mickey Mouse pride pin. And I got it out of the...
Well, not at this moment. We're in our living room. We're in our dining room right now. You were wearing your Mickey Mouse pride pin when we did our interview.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. Okay. So, like, that night I was wearing my pride pin, and it was awesome.
Because in case you guys don't know, Disney has come out with an incredible line of pride stuff this year. They put all of their previous year's efforts to shame.
How can they, like, people argue about, like, Disney being, and especially Disney World, like, them being too, like, too pride-ish. And I'm like, you're in Orlando. You're basically in, outside of San Francisco, you're in the gay capital, outside of, I should say, San Francisco and, like, Miami Beach. But you are in one of the gay meccas of the United States. I imagine thousands of their workforce, if they've got 60, 70,000 people working for Disney World on any given day, thousands of their employees are coming from the LGBT community.
Listen, they are in Orlando, which is the home to the deadliest mass shooting hate crime.
And it was a hate crime.
It was a hate crime. I don't care if people refuse to acknowledge it.
I don't care if Rick Scott couldn't acknowledge that it was gay people who died there, and that Omar Mateen was going there to kill them.
Clearly
had issues that he was dealing with and went to go kill gay people that night.
And what we're talking about is the massacre at the Pulse nightclub,
which is kind of hanging over
all of this right
convention.
Now, because well, it's a 3-year anniversary.
Right. And, you know, there was a mass shooting the week before. There's a mass shooting almost every day.
There's so many of them, we can't keep track of them anymore. But Pulse is something that I think sticks with a lot of Floridians who care.
Well, when we saw Buddy Dyer, and I've always said, and you and I remember, we saw Buddy Dyer in a bar, but
at
it was
a hotel
nice bar.
Lobby.
Yeah, right.
We were at the Grand Bohemian.
It wasn't like he was at the Pelican Pub.
We saw him at the Grand Bohemian when we were going to see Andy
right.
Cohen and Anderson Cooper's AC2 live show.
Right. In
support which was a fundraiser for the victims of Pulse. When Pulse happened, Andy Cohen and Anderson Cooper quickly added an Orlando stop to their tour that wasn't there. Tickets were an astronomical amount, but it was all going to charity. They donated all of their proceeds from it. And all of alcohol sales at the venue went to it as well.
Why I love Andy Cohen. It's just another reason why I love, you know, we talk about the Bravo intersection just real quick. I mean, people ask me, you know, who I look up to, what are people that I like to follow? And it's not the Andy Cohen because of the pop culture taste or the, you know, just the zaniness that is his incredible life. It is because of how smart a creator he is. And if people want to watch somebody who knows, I think he is amazing at knowing when to stop or to cut off something. Like, to, as you've said, it's not that he got rid of Housewives because they had done something wrong. He just knew that they had run their arc. And I find that with storylines. I find that with issues. I find that, honestly, with working relationships, that it's not necessarily a negative. It's just like, hey, we did this thing for 4 years. We're at the terminus here. Addition by subtraction, let's both, you know, be smart and start something new. And I just think he does that again and again, and he is just so smart about that. He talked about that night.
He really did.
And it's always stuck with me about that.
Well, and quite honestly, he and Anderson Cooper both have been very great spokespeople, quite honestly, for the gay community, just by virtue of being such public figures who are very out and proud. Andy's been out and proud for a lot longer and really been moving the needle. We in Florida have a legislator who's doing a really great job of moving the needle. And he also has the distinct honor of being the first ever repeat guest on He Said, She Said.
Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith, who has been a rock star at this convention. Like, he may be the most popular person at this convention other than Nikki Freed.
He was so popular and had Chasen Buttigieg's, I'm sure I just butchered that, plane not been diverted. He was the one who was taking Chasen around Orlando. They were supposed to go to the Pulse nightclub to go do a tour. So he was a rock star. He was super busy. So the fact he made time in his schedule to come sit down with us.
Well, he's been engaged. Like, he and I have been, I don't want to say we've been teaming up because that would sound like we're getting some sort of joy out of this, which we clearly are not. But we have been the 1-2 punch up again. Well, Andy Marlette really also. But the 1-2-3 punch against Representative Mike Hill for the atrocious comments that he said.
And we just can't let this go away.
No. And so
you've got to keep people's feet to the fire.
Mike Hill is rallying on Saturday, right? He's turned this into a fundraising effort. He's turned this into...
This is everything that's wrong with American politics.
A martyr out of this. He's linking it to all sorts of crazy issues. It's terrible. That's why I'm glad we got CGS on for a few minutes. Like you said, our first repeat guest, here he is.
Live from the Florida Democratic Convention, we are joined by State Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith. He is a friend of the podcast. We have already had a very enlightening conversation with him, and we really wanted to bring him back today, and we're so appreciative that he made time in his schedule, because right now, Representative Mike Hill is embroiled in a controversy that we have talked at length about. We have condemned Mike Hill for what his actions, or quite frankly, his inaction when one of his constituents advocated for stoning gay people. And Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith has been one of the loudest voices in opposition to Representative Hill. So we wanted to have you on for your thoughts. Can you share with our listeners why this is so dangerous that this man is in the Florida legislature?
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Michelle and Peter. I'm extremely offended by Representative Hill's behavior, by his actions, by his words, by his non-apology. You know, the homophobia that he is enabling right now is not only offensive, it's dangerous. It's dangerous because it promotes a culture of hate violence against LGBTQ people in the state of Florida. You know, we're in June, it is Pride Month around the country and around the world for LGBTQ people. And this upcoming week is the 3-year mark of the tragedy at Pulse where 49 mostly LGBTQ people of color were murdered. And I don't think it's funny to laugh about executing gay people simply for being who they are. And I say that as someone not only who is a gay man, but someone who is a survivor of anti-gay hate violence myself. What is important for your listeners to understand is that homophobic rhetoric and homophobia is just as dangerous as anti-Semitism. It is just as dangerous as racism. Just think for 1 minute how lawmakers would have reacted had an elected member of the legislature made light or joked about the gassing of Jewish people or the lynching of African Americans in the South.
We're in this period right now where the outraged police, and I wrote this about this, they're constantly being called to put out fires. And there are a lot of, there are even a lot of so-called snowflakes out in the world that, you know, they are offended at, it's like they wake up looking for things to be offended at. Even if you agree with that concept, this is not one of those motherfucking cases.
No.
This is a guy with a track record of homophobic is too soft. Homophobic is like, I've got a milk intolerance. He doesn't like gay people. If he had a choice, should there be gay people or should there not be, he is pressing button B. Homophobic is not enough of a word for him. This situation where one of his lunatic, hateful, angry people makes this comment and he sloughs it off, you have every right. I don't want to apologize to you. I don't want to make you the you know, the defender of all things gay. But I want to apologize to every gay person in the world, every member of the LGBT community, that there are these sons of bitches on our team. You know, when they used to be, when you used to could almost joke about, like in the Seinfeld episodes, about, I think it was Bette Midler was on there. You know, we want to get him on our team, et cetera. It's just ridiculous. It is, I will say, I did appreciate what the speaker came out and said. I wish he would do a hell of a lot more. I think you and I have talked about it offline. They got rid of a senator because he made a racist comment in private. This guy made a violence-inciting comment in public, and he is still standing. He's doubled and tripled down. As you and I are sitting here right now, he is tweeting away more bullshit
he's
at
blocking,
you, at me, et cetera.
He's blocking his critics, which include his constituents, members of the press, and colleagues in the Florida legislature. And the reality is that something has to be done, because the non-apology that he issued, where apparently what he wanted to apologize for was that he did not correct the constituent for using the accurate Bible verse where the stoning of gay people is discussed. That's his apology. No, that is not an apology. That's the perfect example of how a non-apology can make the original remarks even worse. They're obviously not sincere. His remarks have no value. And it's time for the leadership in the legislature to start figuring out what they're going to do. Now, I know that we're out of legislative session, and the conversation about a censure or expulsion from the chamber is a formal action that can be taken by the House of Representatives while we are convened. But that doesn't mean that the speaker cannot strip him of his committee assignments. You know, does Representative Mike Hill really deserve to serve on the House Committee on Public Integrity and Ethics as he currently does? I don't think that he deserves to be on that committee.
No, you would be right. He absolutely has no business on that committee. Quite frankly, he had no business on it before this. All it would have taken is a quick review of his Facebook page and his Twitter feed, and you would have found a long history of homophobic comments.
Yes, and can we talk about the context of the remarks? I think that's important. The context of this was a question about the Florida Competitive Workforce Act, which modernizes our state civil rights law to include protections from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And in Mike Hill's response, first what he does is he talks about how he should have a right to discriminate against by firing an employee, denying someone housing, or denying them service in a public establishment simply based on their sexual orientation and gender identity. That is a position that he defended first, and then the conversation led to, well, should we introduce legislation about executing gay people? So I think that it's important to understand that the Republican leadership needs to put that bill on the agenda for next year to not only protect LGBT people from the Mike Hills of the world, but also to send a message that we will not tolerate any sort of bigotry in the state of Florida. They say it a lot, but I, as an LGBT person who has no legal protections from discrimination in the state of Florida, whenever I hear Republican politicians say, well, we don't have any tolerance for bigotry, you know, I think, well, actually, you do. And there is a loophole and an exception to that statement every time. It's discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, which is still legal in the state of Florida.
You know what I think is the silver lining here? I think we might get the Competitive Workforce Act passed. I've been working on it longer, you know, you're in your second term now. I was working on it before, and we would always get close, but Lucy would pull the football away from us at the end. If Jose Oliva wants to fix this situation, it needs to be heard. It needs to be passed. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to get rid of Mike Hill until we find, what we're going to have to find is a responsible Republican primary opponent. We're not going to ferret him out of that district with the Democrat. But if at the end of the day, in come March, we are still stuck with Mike Hill, you sure as hell better pass that
competitive workforce.
And the governor can actually lead on this issue. It is Pride Month right now. He could send an executive order. He could write an executive order and issue one that says state employees and government contractors in the state of Florida will not be discriminated against based on their sexual orientation and gender identity. He issued an executive order. The first executive order he issued as governor was just reiterating his stance on discrimination against state employees, and it did not include our community. That was a disappointment, but I'm not going to, as an advocate or as a lawmaker, completely dismiss the idea that Governor DeSantis could take action on this. I feel like there is a lot of room for a Republican like Governor Ron DeSantis to stand on issues related to LGBTQ equality, and call me an eternal optimist, but I really feel like there's room for him to get this done, and I think that it's something that is certainly on the table and should be on the table for his administration.
I think that's a great call to action. I think that's a very reasonable response to this situation, and I think that's a great place to end this and let you get back to the convention, because everybody can hear that it's picking up, and you are a star. Everybody wants to see you here, so we are really appreciative that, like,
and
we
I
were able to
them.
Pull you away. Yes, and everyone wants some of your time, so we really want to let you go, but I think that's a great place to leave it at, because a lot of our listeners, I don't think that they can argue with the fact that an executive order from the governor is a great place to start here, mm-hmm. to healing the wounds that mm-hmm. Mike Hill inflicted.
Yeah, it would be a value statement, and I'm sure that he would get editorial reviews that are very positive around the state. People would be applauding him. You would be applauding him. I would urge the governor to write this executive order and follow the leadership of Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry, who wrote a similar executive order for the city of Jacksonville before the human rights ordinance passed a couple of years ago. He could follow the footsteps of John Kasich in Ohio, who issued a similar executive order during the final days of his administration. There is room for Republicans to stand on issues related to LGBTQ equality, and people like me, progressive Democrats, as we are more than willing to applaud them when they take those actions and give credit where credit is due.
Well, thank you very much. You're going to make a lot of folks jealous being our first two-time guest on He Said, She Said. But we hope to make you our third-time guest very soon. Always good to see you.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
CGS is fired up.
As he should be.
Well, it's his time. It's amazing to me because, and I wrote this in my winners and losers list, which I eventually want to get to. You know, he is not super powerful as a lawmaker in Tallahassee. He is not on the Appropriations Committee. He's a second-term Democrat. He is the definition of a backbencher. But what he and Anna Eskenazi have done by, and this is not a derivative or a pejorative term, but they're shit magnets. They are able to get attention to all of their issues.
Which is what you're supposed to do if you aren't, if you don't have great committee assignments, if you don't have seniority, and you can't necessarily get legislation passed in support of your issues, you at least can move the needle on the public debate about your issues, which is what they're doing.
I saw Anna Eskenazi announce today that she's got 12 summer interns. And I just think about it. I don't know another legislative office.
What the hell are you going to do with 12 summer interns?
But she will do something with them. She will, like, she's organizing the rally against Trump, you know.
Well, hopefully she found some decent ones. I never found interns to be useful.
Wow. There's another whole podcast is why interns suck.
They just want to show up whenever they want to show up is what I've found for the most part, and they didn't really enjoy working hard.
I've not had good use with interns.
They only ever wanted to show up when the principal was there.
Coordinator ever was Barry S. Edwards. Are you familiar with his work with interns? That's amazing. All right, so I'm not allowed to go to the Mike Hill rally.
You're absolutely not allowed to go to the Mike Hill rally this Saturday. We've got stuff going on here, and I just think that you might get in a little bit of trouble there.
Right. I'm looking for trouble.
Right. Well, the only person I want to get in trouble there is Mike Hill. And that's kind of why I'm excited for it, because I don't know how he's going to get out of this rally without putting his foot in his mouth. I just see visions of some lunatics at the rally, somehow with lynching type paraphernalia. And I think the visual, there's no way the visual out of this is going to be good. And I hope that it moves the needle enough to force the legislature's hand, to force leadership's hand, and demand he resign.
You know, I don't know if they're going to get him to resign, but I will say, like, I think that...
I don't know if they're going to get him, but they should try their best
if
to.
You know, it'd be interesting if he did something and DeSantis weighed in, because DeSantis has not weighed in yet. Well, he weighed in a little bit, but he has not, like, clamped down on it. Again, you're not going to get him out with a running a Democrat against him. You have got to find a smart Republican. I'm begging Rebecca Bidlack...
Please, just launch your campaign now.
There
we will
be
write
so
you checks.
Much money out of St. Petersburg.
We will host a fundraiser.
Which probably doesn't get her much, but I will hire a Pensacola reporter, and they will just follow her around, and there will be a daily update on her amazing work if she could get rid of. I regret not doing more now. I knew Mike Hill was crazy. I did not know he was hateful the way he is now.
And, you know, we talked about this in some of our interviews. If someone was making light of gassing Jews,
yeah,
the response would be swift on this. So why is it that someone making light of stoning gay people hasn't done anything?
I don't know. You know, when you say that, because so, I, you know, Randy Fine is a friend of mine, and we talk about—
Not a friend of mine.
Because of the—yes, I know. Because of—
Enemy number one of my beloved University of Central Florida, therefore enemy number one of mine.
And so he and I've talked about the anti-Semitism bill, and he will tell you, you know, how is it that you're able to say these things about Jews and get away with it? And I just, you know, I just want to say to people, this is what Trump has brought forward is this.
This is why so many of us cried on election night.
Because
when he was
elected.
Allowed
to say things now that people would have never said about Jewish Americans, about gay Americans,
about women,
about women. Well, it's just, it's, I don't even know the misogyny at this point is just, it's so runneth over at this point. I get it. I'm guilty of it. I say patriarchal things that
I call you right on it.
I know, but it's still,
you even said to me the other day, you said, I feel like you're becoming more and more feminist. And what I don't think you recognize maybe is that in this climate, you have to. I have to, as a woman, as a mother of a daughter, I have to call out every instance of misogyny, especially when my child's in the room, because
well,
you can't
exciting.
Let it pass.
Let me tell you, that's like, I can't tell you how awesome that is to be around.
I'm not mean about it, but when you say something that is well-intentioned, but you're not thinking about what it translates to down the line for a little girl who's internalizing everything, sometimes I have to point it out because I would not be a good mother if I didn't. And you
can
are
you
not
imagine
a, you are not a misogynist.
Well, I mean, can you imagine? I don't want to say that because I feel like anybody that says that probably is. But I will say, can you imagine what it's like at more traditional or what we think of as traditional houses that say a lot more patriarchal stuff than I say?
Right.
I don't get into patriarchal stuff. I don't feel like you need to either. I just don't. Here's the thing. I think a lot of folks, I'll be honest, I think a lot of dudes get off on that. I think that they feel like they are stronger by putting someone down, even if that is their loved one. And I don't need that. I want a strong equal partner. Like, why would I mean, other than our never-ending debates about you won't take out the garbage and you won't drive.
I will never, ever take out the trash as long as I live.
I mean, so you clearly buy into that patriarchal part of the system.
I don't rail against traditional gender roles.
No, that's, you don't.
I clearly, I stay home to support our, you know, to raise our family.
Is that term even right? I mean, I hear that you stay home. I don't think you stay home. You are at home, right?
Right. Well, I will tell you, though, part of what drove me to want to do this podcast with you was in this society with Donald Trump as president and with misogyny really rearing its ugly head again, more in a way that you haven't seen as much before with the president's statements coming out on TV and in the news all the time, and Ella picking up on it, even though I refuse to turn on television news coverage, when she's in the house because I don't want her to hear some of the things he's saying. I felt it was important for her to see that her mom has an equal voice to her dad and that her mom has just as much to contribute outside of the home as inside of the home. And I feel like she's really gotten to see it, you know, this weekend at the convention.
All right, let me say 2 points to that. Let me mansplain to you about two things.
No, but let me finish what I'm saying. This weekend at the convention, she got to see that mommy knew just as many people as daddy. And, oh, I did. That's hilarious.
I'm not saying anything.
The face you made.
I'm not saying anything. I don't know half the people because I don't recognize faces, which is the worst part. So many people like come up to us. Like, I feel so bad.
I got so many great hugs.
I'm
going to
give Evan Ross a great shout out because he's a great source. He sends me a lot of information from South Florida. And he came up to me and I'm like, I know you as at Evan Ross on Twitter. And I know who you are, but I've never actually met you. So.
And this was at a bar after the marathon dinner.
I don't know, you know, I don't necessarily know who you are that way. So you actually probably, you know, you probably recognize more people than I do. You're right. And it's important. I will say what's interesting about you in this podcast is you know that you've become much more liberal just in the 13 weeks that we've done this podcast.
No, it just depends on the issues we're talking about. It just depends on the issues we're talking about,
okay,
actually.
Okay, well, then let's do the gun rights issue
I've always been right there, right. But when we were previewing legislative session, so I am a very pro-business. So, yes, I will, on my own, be spouting off Florida Chamber of Commerce talking points in support of legislation without having read their talking points, because that's just how I feel.
And they appreciated that, by the way. Let me just tell you that.
That's just how I feel.
They're like, why do we deal with him when we could clearly deal with her in a,
right.
you know, better...
So, I mean, no, it just depends on the issues we're talking about. Like, the things that we were accomplished in legislative session
You've
aren't the things that make news.
As a Democrat since this show has started.
I did.
Just think about all of our Republican friends who are like, wait a second, I thought Michelle was, you know.
Listen, I still agree with half of what they believe in, just like I always have. I have always disagreed with it. I have always argued against putting AR-15s in the hands of children. I have always.
Who is for that? Which Republican is for that?
Oh, really? We had a debate at a dinner table at the Vinoy.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
All right. So we have one more interview to get to. It's kind of interesting because we had to get permission, but it's now our second Politico Florida. For all the rivalry, people think that.
So we've now had more Politico reporters on our podcast than Florida politics reporters.
Right. Everybody thinks that we have this big rivalry between Politico Florida and Florida politics. And while there is a definite working rivalry because we're better and we do more than they do, we're good friends with Matt and Anna. Like, Anna's just separate of her work. She's just an incredible sweetheart of a person. Like, she just is always.
She is. I was bummed that she had to work so hard all weekend that I get to see her more.
And I genuinely, like, everybody respects Gary, but I also have this, like, off-grid relationship with him that you get a little bit of a glimpse of here. We do maybe once every 3 weeks a kind of a bitch session about the state of journalism off-grid, and we trade stories about when people are getting fired and who's getting hired and all that kind of stuff. So
now you all will get to hear what I often get to hear. Here is Gary Fineout talking the state of journalism.
Joining us now, this is a little bit of a surprise, our good friend, Gary Fineout of Politico Florida, somebody that I read every morning in Playbook, one of the people that, a lot of people don't know this, but he and I talk a lot offline about the nature of Big J journalism. I don't want to ruin you by saying you're a mentor, but you do offer guiding advice, and so it's nice to have Gary Fineout.
And I'm a big fan of his wife.
She's a sweetheart. She has a standing invitation to rejoin Florida politics. Christine Sexton, who I, every session, say is the best siloed reporter. She knows her beat. And there's always a not-so-subtle subtweet from Gary acknowledging that I say that she is the best reporter. Welcome, Gary.
She is the best reporter.
So you're here at the convention, which is...
I think I got lost. That's how I got over here, but...
is it nice to, it's got to be good to get out of Tallahassee. You've been head down in session for 4 or 5 months right now, right?
Yeah, no, it's good to get out of session. I did get out a couple of weeks ago. I went to the Supervisor of Elections conference over in Daytona Beach, which was very interesting to hear what they had to say and what they were concerned about.
So if we were BuzzFeed, we would do a compare and contrast the Supervisors conference versus the bar scene here at the Florida Democratic Convention.
Well, they were at the beach.
They were?
Yeah, they were at a hotel at the beach.
Maybe do they have more money? Is that what's going on, those supervisors?
Well, you know, actually, I don't know what the conference rates are, but I would tell you, I think the hotel in Daytona Beach was more economical than Disney, but that's because it's Daytona in May. It's kind of off season,
right? I mean, why wouldn't anybody want to stay in Daytona in May? Do you think?
I didn't.
I imagine.
I'm not criticizing Daytona Beach.
I imagine Disney's giving a.
And it's also not May, for the record. It's June.
No, I'm saying when, that
the
what conference he, when his
the conference
was.
The supervisors was in May.
I imagine Disney's giving the Florida Democrats a bit of a rate today. I think that this is...
I'm sure we'll see what the campaign reports say.
Well, I am staring at Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy, and I know, having been a maid of honor in two weddings in this very building, that Mickey Mouse is $5,000 per 15 minutes. So... That
wow.
is at least $20,000 that we're staring at. And that was only for 15 minutes. They've been here for a solid 30.
See, I've now learned something.
What did you think
about the economics of Disney?
Oh, if we had a real podcast, or we had a podcast that we talked about the only thing that we really wanted to talk about, it would be the economics of Disney.
And that rate was from 10 years ago, so it's probably much more expensive now.
So, I mean, this is like the first interview I've got to do of you post your transition. How are you enjoying the move from AP to Politico? We don't want you to talk about your ex-girlfriend. How are you enjoying this new platform, the digital space behind a paywall, but probably with, you know, I will concede that you guys are definitely the top dog in Tallahassee, maybe not the state because, you know, we have a different model.
There's a lot of fine media organizations.
There's a lot of fine, but... How is everything going for you right now?
No,
with the transition?
Going spectacular. It's going great. I mean, one of the deals with Politico is I get to focus my coverage more. You know, the thing about AP is you have to be a master of all trades. You have to try to jump into a story on a lot of different topics, and sometimes you're not up to speed on it, and it takes a while, and you feel like you've got to do a lot of extra reporting to sort of get up to speed on things. And so with Politico, I've had this conversation in the past about, when you have a media outlet that is only focused on a handful of things, it can really do those well. And the difficulty comes when you work for a general interest publication. And
you and I would talk, like there would be times, and you weren't complaining, but you would have to cover the weekend desk for AP and whatever came in. And so you're writing about Florida man goes to the hospital in Palm Beach, or the Florida State Seminoles win the national title, or things like that.
I never got to write that.
You didn't get to do well. That's more Florida State.
As an alumnus, I would have been more than happy to write that story.
But you had to cover, you're a jack of all trades. You had to sometimes cover 20 different topics,
right?
And in stories originating from 25 different media markets, or 21. I think we have 21 TV markets or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the duty. I mean, when you had to do the weekend shift and you had to keep an eye on the entire state. And sometimes you had to jump into something that was happening in Miami or Fort Lauderdale or St. Pete or what have you. But my general thought process about this is that, you know, it's just, I think, as we've seen media become more and more fragmented over the years, I think more and more people get their sources of about particular things from a particular source. And I think they want to go to the be-all, end-all of that particular topic. Now, I think we all would acknowledge that national brands, there are a handful of national brands, and I think Politico is one of them. But Politico, for the most part, they have a kind of a mission, and they kind of focus on that mission. I think that you have the New York Times and the Washington Post and a handful of other outlets, they have a broader mission. Now, certainly I think the numbers have shown that Washington Post and the New York Times have done well in the digital space and have gotten a lot of subscriptions. But I think the challenge that we continue to see is for in media markets that are medium size or smaller, the challenge of being a general interest publication, the challenge of having your subscribers, the challenge of having resources. And I think, I mean, already this year, we've seen a lot of disruption in the industry. And, you know, I've worked with multiple outlets. I've worked for the Miami Herald. I've worked for the New York Times Company. I've worked for McClatchy / Knight Ridder. Now I'm working for Politico. I've worked for AP. So I've cycled through. I guess that's the best way to say it.
Honey, you know, one thing as I'm watching someone right now, big difference between Democrat, Republican, there's a lot less glitter and sparkles at these conventions. Like, I'm not seeing, if you were in charge of this event, bunting everywhere, right? There would be bunting out there. I'm not seeing any bunting. I'm not seeing any sparkly vests. I'm not seeing that.
Patriotic Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy beat any bunting I could have hung.
Good point. All right, so are you excited to do Playbook every morning? As one of the only other people in the world who knows what it's like, other than my wife who has to watch me struggle with it throughout the day where I'm working on it after she puts the baby to bed, and then I'm back up working at it again. Right. It's a motherfucker, isn't it? Andrew Sullivan quit blogging because his health. And I think about that once every couple of months as I'm putting together Sunburn, because
I've only been doing it for a couple of months, so I'm not anywhere near the length at it at you as you are. Yes, there is a time commitment. And you know, you spend time working on it, and there are nights that I'm up fairly late putting it together, and then I get up early in the morning, and there's an editor who looks at it before it goes out, and if there's questions, I've got to answer questions. But so far, my thinking is, the only way I can say it is, yes, it's a lot of work, but I know what the expectations are, and I know what I'm shooting for, and plus the other thing is, it's very interesting. It's an evolution. It's I think that the conversations have about, okay, just because it was done this way doesn't mean you have to do it that way. There's room in the conversation with the people I deal with at Politico about stuff we've added, stuff that wasn't there. I mean,
it is different. All right, so as the person who reads it the most, other than you, is it's less campaign-oriented, but I've noticed, and I will say it was from after I threw a little elbow at you, there's more Gary-isms in there. There's more, by the way, this is what that means, which is what I thought your value was going to be, number one, that nobody else can do. There'll be the headline. You'll have the story from the Times Union, but then you say, hey, between the lines, that means that DeSantis is doing X. That's the value of you and the value of Playbook. And well, I can't lend that.
No. What I had to do is, I mean, there's a ramping up period of like sort of understanding putting it together. I mean, just the mechanics, like how do we piece it together? Where do we get the information? Who's doing what? Did we get this in? And so I kind of dealt with that, trying to get the feel for it. And then as we've moved along, I've said, well, I want to add this, or I want to add that, or to your point, I see a story and I want to add something that isn't in the story.
This is the beauty of doing a podcast. You never know who's going to come up right behind you and mix it up. We've got a whole line of important people.
I know. I will gladly.
We were no.
I will
we're
gladly
just glad,
give up the microphone.
Well, everybody loves talking about the media, and they want your insights. They want to know. So, thank you for joining us.
No.
I just want you to know that you keep me up at night. I wonder every night what you have in there. You motivate me, and so I appreciate everything that you do. See, I told everyone that Gary and I actually get along.
Yeah, I knew that you guys got along. This is no secret. You guys talk a lot more than people realize.
People, ever since the Caputo-Shorsh throwdown of 2015-16, still think that I have this thing out against Politico Florida, and I don't. I'm just honest about... I'm very honest
about my media assessments, and I love to give credit where credit is due. That's why there were a lot more winners on my list of post-session winners and losers. I don't like calling folks out, but I feel like there used to be more media criticism. There used to be more of that, and it wasn't necessarily a negative thing. It was just the media is a big business. It should be criticized in the same way that we are critical of movies or theater or sports. But what's happened is the president has turned in, you know, where the media is the, quote, enemy of the people. And so to criticize the media right now, you're almost joining with Trump's criticism of, quote, fake news and all that stuff. And so I've kind of shied away from it over the last year or two, except where I feel like, you know, it's necessary, like year-end reviews and things like that. I'm getting a blank face because your love of media criticism is about as long as my.
I'm sorry. I really try for my eyes not to glaze over when you dork out like that, but it just happens sometimes.
I didn't dork out the other night when you were talking about Big Little Lies on Sunday night in bed, and you gave me like a 25-minute rundown. I felt like I was sleeping next to Alan Siepenwald.
It wasn't a 25-minute rundown. It was 15 minutes. Thank you very much.
Are you excited about the first episode?
Yeah, it really delivered. I was worried how they would pull it off. I don't really like when you do a limited series based on a book, and then after it's successful, you decide to do another series, and there's no book, there's no source material.
Yeah,
for
talk
it.
To the friend people at Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
That's what
happens. But so far, it looks like our friends at Big Little Lies might be able to pull it off. Meryl Streep really is delivering a great nuanced performance.
Up-and-coming actress Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I don't know if people have heard of her before. But they're doing a good job showing the toll that what happened last season is taking on each of their lives. And I think that if they keep building correctly, that the show could hopefully maintain the integrity it had in its first season. And this better be the last season. I also want to go on record as saying that. Like, no part three. This is the end.
Let's wrap it up. All right, speaking of wrapping it up, we don't have any housekeeping.
Sure we do. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star review. If you like an episode of the podcast, tweet it out to your friends or share it on your Facebook wall.
People
that is how we get viewers.
There's a lot
of listeners. I'm sorry.
There's a lot of Twitter handles that people should be tweeting out based on the first two editions of the Leadership Blue interviews. Like, I mean, not just the interviewees, but there's a lot of good name dropping in these podcasts. So, you know, I expect to see some good tweetage and Facebooking of everything we did over this one. We have one more episode that we're going to launch in the next couple of days after this one. Another good set of interviews with some really good friends, some major news about a state lawmaker and what they plan to do next, and then insights from two other people deep
inside
the
process.
And
we may have been in the cups at that point.
Yeah,
so.
I think like there are moments where like people are running over to the bar during the podcast. So just stick with us on that one. All right, let's close it down. What is your hot take for this episode?
I had a different one, and now I actually am going a different way.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Love
I love when I do
in
this
the last
to you.
3 minutes.
In the
just
last
gone,
3 minutes,
okay.
I just completely changed my mind because I remembered that it happened when we were talking to Dave Ehrenberg. So I'm just going to say it. This Democratic event was so much more fun than any Republican event I have ever been to. And do you want to know why?
Yeah, why?
Because our five friends came out.
Oh, that's right.
Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy. Okay, four friends, all in their patriotic garb. I have never seen this version of these four. And they all came out together.
Right next to us.
So you can hear in the Ehrenberg interview, I just got up from the table and ran over. I'm squealing with excitement right. Like a little girl.
Like, we've never seen that on the cruise ships. We've benefited from the Disney cruising, seeing, you know, Mexico Mickey and...
Ella's looking forward to seeing French Mickey again, Spanish Mickey again. We love Spanish Goofy. Spanish Goofy is a matador, so his cape is amazing.
We've seen Halloween, Christmas,
I mean, we won't talk about how problematic it is for Goofy, a dog, to be a matador that kills bulls.
I never thought about that. But no, it was, you know, I will say it was kind of interesting the, like, people did not stampede to the Mickey, which
they had, like, no idea. So I got to keep going up.
I know. At a Republican event,
there would have been a line out the door.
It would have been like, you know, Sean Hannity.
You
want
to know
here.
Why? Because at a Republican event, it would have been noticed. Like, you would have known that the characters were coming from this time. The legislators would have brought down their children for the photo with that. Like, it, a big problem of this event was there was really no information about what was going on anywhere.
Rob Bradley would have, like, set up shop, like, and just
why wouldn't you?
Right. That was a great... All right, so you're not going to have any idea where my hot take is going to come from, but, you know, like, so I have been... I don't know what's happened to me, but I'm starting to get back into sports this year. And I know you're, like, alarmed by part of that.
I'm so alarmed. I don't know what you did with my husband.
I watched NBA Finals on TV. I'm reading about it. I'm knowledgeable about it again. I've loved sports all my life. Let me give you the first ever soccer take on He Said, She Said. But you're going
to
appreciate
this. But can I just say
something
to you? If you ever try to make me go to a soccer game again... our marriage might end.
You're going to appreciate this one because this is right up your alley. Right now, as we're speaking, is the Women's World Cup. And the United States is one of two favorites to win it all again, battling against France.
Battling for equal pay.
Battling for equal pay. Well, here's what really sucks about the Women's World Cup. The dumbass men that organize the two other major Western Hemisphere tournaments, and I'm not even sure what they are. I'll say them, and I can read them, but it's the Gold Cup, which is hosted by CONCACAF, the body that governs soccer in North.
Blah, blah, blah.
You know, and then the other one that oversees, it's called CONMEBOL or whatever. It oversees South American soccer.
Yeah.
Again, I don't care about these tournaments. They've scheduled their finals for the last day of the Women's World Cup. It's like the one time women's sports gets to be on a global stage.
And here come the men
and
to
the
snatch
men
it away.
Are going to just, they're going, I mean, I'm sorry, you know that if Mexico gets to the finals of whatever, and it's the U.S. versus France in the Women's World Cup, on any other day, all the soccer fans in the world are going to turn into that Women's World Cup.
Of course.
But if it's Brazil versus Argentina and Mexico versus Honduras in these two tournaments, guess what people are going to watch? Can you imagine the Women's World Cup being the third most watched soccer match? World Cup final being the third most, excuse me. Can you imagine the Women's World Cup final being the third most watched soccer match on the day of its final? That is just insane. I don't know how this kind of crap happens. So when we go back to our earlier talk about misogyny and so forth, this is the things that we should change. Like, those guys should say, hey, all the organizers should just stop and say, wait a second, if we really want soccer to work out for the rest of the world for the next 50 years, we're gonna move our events one day before, one day after. So my hot take about soccer for the first time ever, it does intersect what we care about. He said, she said, and playing soccer and all that. Although we'll never, you know, it'll be the last time we probably have a soccer hot take.
I like that hot take, actually. I like sometimes when you surprise me.
I thought you'd get a big surprise. All right. Thank you very much for listening to this one. Stay tuned. Next couple of days, we'll pop
the final edition.
The third part of the trilogy.
The third part of the trilogy.
Which usually is never good, but we promise this one will be...
We actually have some really good interviews for this
one. Yeah, this one, the third part of... It's like Return of the Jedi. It's right there with the other two. In fact, didn't we have a Return of the Jedi reference in Eric Johnson? So, but it's right there. It is not Godfather 3. It is more Return of the Jedi, the third edition. Thanks for listening.